But I hate the government. They've been on my back like hump on granny.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from our remote Carter Subaru studio. Welcome. It's been an incredibly busy news afternoon. So I started the show wrapping up yesterday's Jay Inslee presser because he started it at 2:30. So I was essentially off the air. And there were just some ridiculous things at the press conference. Now, Nicole, can I share with the listeners what you shared with me yesterday about the governor?
Yeah, I sure hope it doesn't jinx it, but yes.
Okay, well, and just because it was all via text, I haven't really heard it out of your own words. So what's going on with the governor?
Well, I've been told that he may come on the show next week.
For a one-on-one interview?
That's it. Mm-hmm.
And he may come on? Does that mean a 1% chance, a 99% chance?
I'm not really sure. So I just sent him an email asking if he would be interested in coming on this week or next. And they said this week ended up pretty crazy. And he said, check with me on Monday and maybe we can make it work next week.
And you'd been working on this for some time, I assume?
Every once in a while, I check in with them and see what kind of response I get. And this is the most hopeful. They're never rude and they never say no necessarily. It's just, busy today or busy this week. This was the most hopeful.
It's so weird. I mean, it's just been such a weird evolution with him and me. Because, I mean, the first time he and I ever really met and talked at any great length, he initiated it. I was doing my show from the 2004 Democratic Convention, which was in Boston. I know the two conventions were Boston and New York City. I think the RNC was New York City and the DNC was in Boston, I think. But anyway, I'm doing my radio show and, he's a handsome man. I see this strapping, tall fella walking up stride towards me. And he introduced himself. And he just wanted to talk basketball, and which, of course, I hate talking politics off the air. And he told me that he goes to, I don't know if he still does, I think it's called Hoopaholics. I think it's up on Bainbridge Island. And it's just where, just absolute basketball junkies go and play for a weekend. And he said, I would like you to come and join me at Hoopaholics. And I said, absolutely. I would love to do that. That would be absolutely lovely. And so that's how it all started. And then we just kind of stayed in touch a little bit. And I would have him on the show once in a while. And then he's running for governor. And he promised he would never raise taxes. And I'm thinking, okay, if he's going to be fiscally responsible, he's a pleasant enough fella. I will support a fiscally responsible Democrat in our state. And he promised he would never raise taxes as governor. And then early in his first term, he and I do this charity basketball game at Shorecrest High School, packed to the rafters, over 2,000 people. He had a five-person team. I had a five-person team. Then we played one-on-one. And, we're just, as close as I can get to a politician. And then he started raising taxes. Well, you lied to me and my listeners, and he didn't like being called a liar. And I said, but you lied. And then it just devolved because, my first responsibility with this radio show is to you, the listener, and not to any, little phony relationships that I've conjured up. So then...
Sometimes you just have to separate the band from the job, I think. And so you can play basketball, and that's fine. And you can do it again someday. But when it comes to business, you don't get along.
And I hope... Well, and it's not we don't get along. It's that I am fulfilling my job to be a watchdog of government. And he's a big boy, and he's been doing government for a long, long time. And he should have no problem with that. But I feel that he's gotten very used to kind of a suck up media, because he would, when he was running for president, the people at MSNBC and CNN, they needed drool bibs every time they interviewed Jay. I mean, because you can get lost in those dreamy eyes of his. And I mean, they loved him. And then he's got a local media where it's structured that follow-up questions can't be asked. And there are a lot of legitimate questions about this shutdown of our economy. And I think it would be a fascinating and pleasant, but, you know, I wouldn't let him filibuster. But would I love to have just a normal man-to-man conversation about what's going on in our world? Absolutely, I would love that. So
I often think that's why
people are listening.
A lot of politicians get into the places they are because they're likable. And so out of the office, they're very likable and, you know, relatable as far as basketball and, you know, being a dad and things like that. They're very relatable, moms and dads, and they're just like us, right? But then they start making decisions and you have to disagree, and that's okay. That's what we're supposed to do. Challenge
Absolutely.
That.
Just as he's free to disagree with any opinions that I espouse on the radio. So anyway, and like Nicole said, I'm not trying to jinx it, but I hope they make the maybe for sure for sometime next week, because I think that would be just absolutely fascinating to sit down and have a conversation with the governor, when I have been one of the biggest critics, not of him personally, but of his policies and decisions that are being made here. So
I'd love to get you guys on Zoom.
I would love to socially distance, be face to face. And yes, right. Zoom, I'll absolutely do Zoom or Teams, because I think eye contact, even if it's virtual, would be a really good thing for that. But I'll go down to Olympia and I'll sit,
we'll take what we
you know,
can
12
get.
Feet. Yeah, I'll sit. make that offer. I'll go down to Olympia, and if it's a time frame where I know that's.
I can't even get you to go to the studio. That is shocking. I have never heard you say you would go meet somebody. Except for maybe a sponsor.
That's so funny, because it is so true. No, I'll make that pledge to you right now, Nicole, and I'm not going to tell lies like I'm accused politicians of making. If they would go for it, I'll wear a mask. I'll sit as far apart as possible. But if we could do the interview face to face, and if it happens in a time frame where it's live during the show, I'll talk to management. I'll see if we can get a half hour commercial free, an hour commercial. I mean, I'll do whatever I can, because there are some unbelievably serious, weighty issues that are affecting lives for decades to come right now in our state. And yes, I would love to do the face-to-face thing. So I will
send him this audio tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So and I think it'd be really good for him, because I can espouse my opinions unchallenged every single day. And for him to be able to take on some of the things that I've been saying and some of the notions that I have about what he's doing to and with the state. I'll give him a shot. I'd love to. I would love to send him this audio.
Oh, man. That'd be so fun. I'm so excited at the possibility of it happening.
Do you want to go down? We'd have to take separate
cars.
I'm not riding in vehicles with other people these days. You know.
And I'm definitely not wearing a mask in the car, that's for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, we'll get an engineer to go. I'll do my show from down there. I'll do the show. If he has to do it, if he can't record it, and he has to do it between noon and 3, we'll do it live. We'll do it live.
I love it.
And, yeah, so that's my counter offer to their maybe, is I will go to what is for me unprecedented lengths to go make this happen. Seriously, one serious question for you, Nicole. Would I have to dress up?
Um, Well, you could wear those pants that almost look like slacks, those sweatpants.
The sweatpants that look like slacks?
Those black ones that you have that are comfy but look fancier than sweatpants.
Yeah, I like those.
Yeah, that would be good. Or you could wear your live show jeans.
Yeah. I haven't worn pants since January, since before my knee surgery. Okay, I'd love to continue this aimless banter, but I have some breaking news for you here in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Breaking news.
Dave Summers is the Snohomish County executive, and they are asking the governor to allow them to accelerate to phase two, even though they aren't even close, as is King and Pierce County. We are not close to the metrics that the governor has laid out for phase two, but they say they want an exemption and they want it now. And Snohomish County Exec Dave Summers joins us live here on the Dory Monson Show. Executive Summers, I appreciate the time this afternoon.
Hi, Dory. Thanks for having me.
Okay, before I get to what we want to talk about, I just need your opinion. If I go down to Olympia to interview the governor next week, do I have to dress up or can I wear shorts and a T-shirt?
That's my pay grade, being your fashion advisor, Dory. I don't even want to go there.
Wow, I didn't think I was coming out of the blocks with such a hard-hitting question. Okay, let's get to what you're on for. So Jay Inslee has laid out all of the metrics for phase two. It is clear that King, Snohomish, Pierce counties, we aren't even going to be close by June 1st. But you want an exemption. Tell me why.
Well, actually, that's not exactly right, Dory. We are extremely close. We can check all the boxes that the state has laid out in terms of having PPE both on hand and in the pipeline, testing gear, testing capacity, contact tracing, a quarantine facility site. We have hospital capacity. So we check all those boxes. And if you look at our case counts in Snohomish County, we've been under 20 a day, total new cases. And if you move out and take out the long-term healthcare facilities, which CDC says is appropriate to do when you're looking at this type of data, and if you just look at the general population, we're within one or two a day of the state's number. So we think if you look at the totality of what's going on in Snohomish County, we're extremely close.
Okay, and that's what I was citing because, yeah, it's supposed to be under 10 cases, and I did see you were at 20, and you know, that would be you're still double what they say is acceptable. But I understand what you're saying about the long-term care facilities. Okay, so how do you go about this? How do you what's the strategy to try to get business open in SNOCO up there?
Yeah, so I've recommended to the county council and to the Board of Health we move forward. They have to vote on that, and the county council will be meeting tomorrow, as will the Board of Health, to approve that us submitting the application for the variance. It's my hope we will have that into the state by the end of the day. I consulted the health officer here in Snohomish County this week. He's in full agreement and support of this action. We've got letters of support from our hospitals, and we've got all the materials that the state asks us to submit on this. So we'll get that to the state right away. You know, I would ask the governor and the state, Department of Health, frankly, is the one that reviews the application, to hopefully at the latest get us open by June 8th. So another week out, I know they're going to have to take a look at the data and there's going to be some back and forth, but we would like to get a date on the calendar so our businesses can plan on it.
Okay, and just to kind of sum up my view on what's going on in our region, Executive, I believed in the early mitigation. I believed in the, you know, closing the bars and the restaurants as early as we did. I think the stay at home for people like me, I could do this indefinitely, and it doesn't affect my job. There are a lot of people who don't have that luxury. And we're looking at, you know, 30% unemployment in the lowest income strata, people making under $40,000 a year because the service sector has gotten completely wiped out. And I do think we have to balance whatever the health concerns continue to be with what could be generational damage to our economy. And so I have become very critical of this economic shutdown of our state. So just what's your 30,000 foot view of how the governor has been handling this and specifically how it affects your Snohomish County?
Yeah, that has weighed heavily on us all. I mean, it weighs heavily on me, and I know it weighs heavily on the governor. First, let me say, I think as a state, we're in really good shape because of the early action and the plan that the governor put in place. I've been in full support of that. So we avoided the medical surge that overwhelms, you know, medical facilities. We flattened the curve. We've done that. But charting a path forward, there is both the public health concern that's got to be managed, and there's the economic impact to people. So, you know, by moving forward, I recognize many small businesses have probably failed or are on the edge of failing, do need some hope and some ability to start to move forward so they can pay their bills and their employees, et cetera, and start to reopen. So it's a tough course to really chart.
Yes.
We're going to be continuing to ask people to take the safety measures and the businesses put those in place. It's not throwing the gates wide open. This is a cautious step, and hopefully it'll help.
And I understand that. I understand all of that. And I'll gladly wear masks in stores and all that. But I'm reading the statement, the email that was sent out by a consortium of politicians, yourself and several others from the county council. And in your statement, you're very specifically critical of Jay Inslee's leadership.
I don't think I was on a letter that was critical, but It's very tough. We just need to be thoughtful as we move forward. I personally think we're going to be as safe tomorrow as we'll be in 1 month. The virus is not going away. We have to figure out how to start to do business with it present in our communities. And this is we're close enough to the criteria that we're laid out that we can move forward. You know, our unemployment in Snohomish County, we're the highest county in the state. We're at 20%. So I get it. And that's both small businesses and large businesses. You know, Boeing is our largest employer. They've been hard hit. It's tough on everybody, and that is very real. I know people are suffering, out of work, need to pay their bills. That is part of the equation that we're all grappling with. And again, we're close enough on the medical numbers and the capacity to handle it that I think it's time to move forward, and that's why I'm making this recommendation.
Okay, and last thing for you, Executive, because we have a Jay Inslee press conference live in just a few minutes we're going to be going to. But you mentioned the early medical surge, and that's why we did all the mitigation. That never even came close to materializing. You know, we were told they were going to be doing triage on the sidewalks outside of hospitals. They built a hospital at CenturyLink Center, never had one patient use it. We were told we needed all these ventilators from the feds, and then we sent 80% of them back. It seems like everything that this health crisis was built on turned out to not materialize. And I know people can say it's because of our early mitigation, but it could also be said that things were, for whatever reason, dramatically exaggerated to us, the citizens. And that's why many of us remain so skeptical of things we're being told today.
I attribute that to the actions we all took together as a community. Our hospitals were full. They were at capacity. We were very close to overwhelming them. And we've seen it time and time again in other parts of the world and other parts of the country. You know, we were successful in flattening the curve. We accomplished what we set out to do in those terms. I believe that very strongly. And you know, as a biologist, I have some understanding of how these things work. We were really on the edge. And I'm just, you know, proud of our community. The citizens of Snohomish County and the region have just done a fantastic job. One other thing I want to say, we've been, you know, arm in arm with King County and Pierce County on this. And over the last week, it's also occurred to me that we are not, Snohomish County is not King County. We don't have a Seattle or a Bellevue or an Eastside. We're not as dense. We're 850,000 people. So we are sort of intermediate between some of the more rural counties and our most urban county. So I love the partnership we've had as a region, but I do also need to look out for Snohomish County. And again, yeah, that's one of the reasons we're moving forward.
Okay, I hope you get the variant. I'd love to see Snohomish County get back to work as soon as possible. I want to see the state get back to work, and we got to start resuscitating this economy. Snohomish County Executive Dave Summers, always appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on with me today.
Thank you, Dort.
All right, Dave Summers joining us live. That is your Big Lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We are moments away from another Jay is, oh no, I can't talk negatively about it since we're trying to get him on the show next week. We're moments away from bringing you a press briefing from Governor Jay Inslee. He'll tell us the very latest. It's coming up next on the Dory Monson Show. What timing? Jay Inslee just sitting down to his press conference. We take you to Olympia Live.
Good afternoon. Today I'd like to talk about two issues and two steps forward we're making in our fight against the COVID virus. The first is a proclamation I'm issuing today that will improve our health and safety guidelines for the hardworking people in the agricultural industry. And we'll have Alejandro Sanchez and L&I Director Joel Sachs on hand to answer questions and comments by Eric Nicholson of the United Farm Workers after my comments. After that, I'd like to tell you about our testing strategy, another of our steps to protect our long-term care facilities. I'm joined by Health Secretary John Weissman to talk about those issues, as well as Authority Deputy Medical Officer Carissa Fatinos and DSHS Secretary Cheryl Strange, and also Assistant Secretary for Aging and Long-Term Administration Bill Moss to answer questions that any folks may have afterwards. I'd like to address the over 100,000 people in Washington who are working in the agricultural industry. We know that your labor is so critical to providing food for all of us, and we particularly are thinking about the 1.7 million Washingtonians who have food insecurity today in Washington state. We know that the production of healthy produce comes from the hardworking folks on our farms and fields. So today's proclamation is providing clear guidelines for both employers and workers that has been asked for, and I want to express my gratitude for those who worked in the collaboration to produce these guidelines. That work was not easy, and I know that today's proclamation speaks to your advocacy and commitment. You know, it was renowned labor leader Dolores Huerta who said, "Honor the hands that harvest your crops." And our state boasts some of the best produce in the world, and that's because we've got some of the hardest working people in the world. And we certainly know that every time we eat, there was a hand that provided our sustenance. And so we know we have rich soils, we have diverse climates, we've got large-scale irrigation. But mostly we have hardworking people, both orchardists and workers and farmers who are responsible for harvesting over 300 different crops in our state. And I know some of these are the hardest working people around. I lived in Sela for a couple decades and knew many folks and saw many folks just doing this incredibly hard work, cold and pruning and hot in harvest. And frankly, these folks deserve more recognition what they do in our communities. So this crisis means we're fighting with our strength to help everyone, and today we're talking about agricultural workers. The task to come up with the right policies is challenging, from the fields to employer-provided transportation and housing and other congregate settings like packing houses. There's numerous points of risk for people who are working in agriculture. The striking workers in Yakima on the lines as we speak are clear in their calls that more needs to be done. We hear that message, and that's why we're acting today. So today we're announcing additional safety standards for COVID-19 prevention for agricultural workers across the industry. These standards built on the requirements set forth at the beginning of the crisis for all industries, with more specific provisions for the unique needs of this industry. This proclamation is going to protect workers in the fields, in packing houses for fruit and vegetables, and on employer-provided transportation. These requirements complete the remaining standards that really are necessary to
implement. I'm going to jump in here for a couple of reasons. One, I just want to be transparent with you. You know, early on, we made the commitment, the decision, we're going to bring you every Trump COVID-19 briefing wall-to-wall, every Jay Inslee briefing wall-to-wall. And, you know, it's something we've all wrestled with the last couple of weeks because I also want to have a listenable radio show. And something like this, the agricultural worker guidance, we could easily just hear what he has to say and sum it up for you. And, in fact, they say they're going to have hand-washing stations, PPE, physical distancing. There's nothing new and interesting in this. And then they have the guest speakers who, you know, have a 1 to 2 minute prepared statement. And, you know, I cut out from that with the religious leaders yesterday. I was planning on cutting out from that today, but I'm going to cut out even a little bit earlier here because I don't know. And, you know, it's fine. Protect the agricultural workers. But I'm not sure we need to go wall to wall on this. And we've cut away from some of the president's press conferences for the exact same reason. So I have to exercise some editorial discretion here and try to keep the radio show as listenable as possible. Now, we're still hooked up with Olympia, and especially when Jay Inslee goes to Q&A with the reporters, which to me, with both Trump and Inslee, is where the most interesting material emanates. So we will take you back. He's now tossed it to his guest speakers, you know, the Department of L&I director, guys like that, and we don't need to carry that live. So if some people don't like the decision, I still got to make decisions that I think are best for the radio show and for the audience as a whole. And there are some other issues in the news today that I think are of much more broad importance. And one centers around, I haven't even had a chance to get to this because we've been covering so much breaking news throughout the afternoon here. But our Attorney General, Bob Fergie Ferguson, again, today he sent out a press release that he has secured several $100,000 from a landlord who tried to evict some tenants. And the landlord has agreed to pay these tenants collectively, I think 12 of them, 14 of them, $300,000. And they can't collect rent from them. What I've said all along about the eviction ban is that for people who have lost their job because government destroyed their job, their company, their economy, then government should take care of those people. Government destroys the economy, destroys the jobs. Government should help them with their rent. But that's not the way government's doing it. Government is telling the private sector, you must help them with their rent. But it's not just the people who have lost their jobs due to coronavirus. They've also told people who are still employed, if you don't want to pay your rent, your landlord can't evict you. And that is a criminal government taking of private property. And I've said it a million times, we're watching fundamental constitutional rights being eroded in the name, not just eroded, being trampled in the name of a health crisis. You know, the ability to worship. I mean, the First Amendment is what gives us freedom to worship at our churches, and that was taken away. I'll give you another one. Both of our senators, Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell, have signed on to a Senate bill that says if you call coronavirus or COVID-19, if you call it the Wuhan flu, That's hate speech. I have never called it that. I started calling it COVID-19 on day one. But you want to get me to start calling it Wuhan flu? Try criminalizing my speech. Try telling me how I must speak. Because government knows if they can control language, they can control minds. And now we've got both the senators in our state, Cantwell and Murray, saying that if you call this pandemic using the place of origin as its name, you can be hit with a hate speech charge. That's Cantwell and Murray trying to take away First Amendment protection. Jay Inslee takes away the church First Amendment protection. Government cannot impose itself on our worship. But he says, I can in a pandemic, which is why it is so important to them to perpetuate this pandemic, to stretch it out as long as possible. It's why they tell us, phase two on June 1st. And then we get close to June 1st, they go, it might be June 15th. If they just put it, that carrot at the end of the stick, we'll just keep chomping at it. And then on June 15th, we haven't hit the metrics. It's going to be July 1st, August 1st. It's the easiest way to string us out because they're enjoying taking away private property rights, free speech rights. And when our attorney general, Fergie, he sends out a press release. Look at this. I'm going after landlords who evicted tenants. I want to read to you an email. No, it's not an email. I think I saw this in the comments of the Seattle Times. But the guy wrote, my wife and I are low-income seniors with one rental home. The rent collected amounts to 70% of our monthly income. Our property taxes on this rental are due soon. We even do the yard maintenance for our tenant because they're always too busy to take care of their own yard. Several weeks ago, our tenant informed us he is going to stop paying rent and plans to remain in our home indefinitely. We don't receive any other income other than a $1,600 per month pension. Now I'm informed I have to provide housing to a tenant who refuses or is unable to pay rent? Should we vacate our home and live on the street in our 1978 motorhome? We don't know what to do. Is that righteous of Jay Inslee and Bob Ferguson to tell this elderly couple on a fixed low income that they have to donate? And this guy doesn't say if this renter lost their job because of the economic calamity or if he's still working. But it doesn't matter to Jay Inslee and Bob Ferguson. They just saw it as a way to take private property away. And so we have to stand against this. And I want you to think about this with Bob Ferguson. He will go after Flores and attack their constitutionally protected religious freedoms and destroy them. Destroy Baronel Stutzman in the Tri-Cities financially. He'll go after a barber up in Snohomish, a Marine vet who says, I can't afford to sit at home every day anymore. I still got to pay rent on my shop. I got two disabled vets who work for me, who have little kids at home, and we got to get them back to work. Bob Ferguson's going after the barber, the florist, the landlords. But who does Bob Ferguson not go after? Has he gone after employment security? Has he gone after Susie Levin and asked how were Nigerians able to steal hundreds of millions? And it now looks like it was over $500 million from the citizens of our state under your nose. Was it an inside job? Were there other people who may have participated in this within employment security? was Susie Levin or Levine the best person, given that she got the job because she was a huge Democratic contributor and Obama bundler who had given millions of dollars to Democratic candidates and, you know, most recently was working for Pete Buttigieg? That's the best person in the world to run employment security in Washington? Would Bob Ferguson ever say, hey, Jay, how did you put this person in charge? Because she was a Democratic donor? And now the taxpayers have lost maybe $500 million? Of course our AG won't do that. He's going after the barber in Snohomish. He's going after nickels and dimes instead of hundreds of millions. Because when the Democrats, who have complete political protection, are the ones who blow the hundreds of millions with their hiring decisions and their mismanagement of, you know, the most basic cybersecurity. They're wiring money to out-of-country bank accounts, and they don't have any system in place to figure out that they might be getting scammed. Hey, this doesn't look right. Does Bob Ferguson go after Sound Transit, which, again, was lying this last week? When they said, oh, we never said we would reduce congestion. And then the folks at, I think it was Washington Policy, said, oh, here's the ballot measure that you put before voters. And you said you lied and said you would reduce congestion. They did the same thing with Sound Transit One. Their own internal document said, we will never reduce congestion. And they ran commercials saying, it'll be a magic carpet and congestion. Even if you don't ride the train, if you drive a car, it'll reduce congestion. Sound Transit lied. They lied to the legislature to get Sound Transit 3 on the ballot. They lied to the voters and said it'll only cost you $70 a year when a lot of people get their car tab bills. And it's, you know, $300, $400, $500, $600 a year. Voters said $30 tabs, and Bob Ferguson, who's supposed to be defending the will of the voters, instead is defending his buddies, his cronies at Sound Transit, so they can continue to steal billions of dollars. Ah, but I got that barber in Snohomish corralled, don't you, Bob? You got the florist in Tri-Cities, but the people in your party who are stealing billions and billions and billions of dollars, you don't have time for any of that? You won't go after Sound Transit for their blatant lies. You won't go after employment security for failing somehow, unimaginably, to lose hundreds of millions of dollars to Nigerian scammers. And this is where I get back to, you know, the basic bedrock principle of this radio show. We have to watch out for what's going on. Because the people who we pay to watch out for it, like Bob Ferguson, our attorney general, he is completely in the pocket of one party. Justice is blind. Justice has an eye patch in Washington. He protects his party. He attacks viciously anybody who doesn't think like he's supposed to. So that's what's going on in our state. And I would rather tell you and talk about that for a few minutes than have listened to what the governor was getting off on in his press conference. But his press conference does continue in Olympia. I think all the guests have finished talking, so I'm hoping we're getting to some Q&A soon. We go back to Olympia live coverage here on the Dory Monson Show, Cairo FM.
Make sure we get that job done. In addition, our state will pay the laboratory costs for those tests for staff only. Residents, will presumably their insurance, will take care of those costs. If facilities cannot meet these requirements in the time frame, they need to notify us so we can work to solve the problems to get this job done promptly. Now, this is just one of the steps we've already taken, and I'm glad that we have been working on this for some time. Our state has already sent strike teams to these long-term care facilities to provide on-site assistance with testing and controlling infections. They've had assistance with PPE use in response to outbreak with distributions through our Emergency Operations Center. And folks in these facilities have been in Tier 1 to have access to what has been a very restricted supply that we've been able to obtain from the federal government and other sources. We've also previously provided guidance on infection control, and DSHS has been doing recurrent inspections on adherence to these infection control procedures. On top of that, our state's provided technical assistance to long-term care administrators, as well as webinars for administrators and staff to really try to prevent the spread of this dangerous virus. We're continuing work on plans to provide interval testing so that we can have repeat testing as time goes on. So we're developing an interval testing strategy for the rest of the long-term care facilities, such as adult family homes and assisted living facilities without memory care units. So with a little more detail about this order, I want to turn over to John Weissman, our secretary, and Carissa Fatinos, who's really provided some great talent in this effort. John?
Great, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to take it back here for a couple more minutes, I guess, as he goes to now our Secretary of Health. And take a quick time out. Okay, we'll do that, and then we will get you back for the question and answer period of Jay Inslee's press conference as the Dory Monson Show continues. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. This actually was a very fun show just because of all the breaking news, and I enjoy it when we've got all kinds of stuff that we don't anticipate flying at us. Jay Inslee has just gotten the mic back from one of his guests at his press conference, so we're going to take you back there, and then Tom and Curly are going to pick it up from here. So you are listening to KIRO FM, Tacoma, Seattle. Take care. These are crazy times. God bless you. Let's go back to Olympia and Jay Inslee, and then Tom Curley coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow at high noon.
Reduce the infection rate in the community so it doesn't go into these facilities. So we can all be really helpful to preserve life in these spots. I think this is a good order, but it's not the only thing we can do. We all have a chance to take care of our loved ones, many of whom are of advanced age and therefore the wisest amongst us. So we hope people can help out every way they can. With that, happy to stand for questions.
Question comes from Nick with AP.
Oh, hi. Are there any penalties for failing to comply with the farm worker protections or Can you summarize those?
Joel, you want to talk about that?
So under our occupational safety and health rules, there are penalties associated with violating both what's here as well as our standard rules. And those are calculated on a case-by-case basis by formula, and it typically can be up to $7,000 depending upon the nature of the violation, the potential harm to the worker, and the size of the employer.
I just want to note, if I may, that these sanctions are available, but we've had such broad-scale compliance with our orders to date. And I want to thank the business community. The vast majority of business leaders have protected themselves and their employees and their customers by complying with these rules, the vast majority. And there's been very few folks who have been non-compliant. Those folks tend to be the ones reported in the press, of course, but we just want to thank the people who run businesses. They've made some very difficult decisions to try to protect people, and we appreciate that. Now, we have had some folks who need some reminding, and they need to be reminded that there are fines if they do not comply with these safety rules, including being open when they should not. In the last few days, we've had a number of businesses that thought they were going to skate by and not follow these rules, and we had to remind them they'd be fined, and they indeed have shut down in the last few days.
So we've had some additional health in our state. But it's a very small group, and I want to thank the business community for what they're doing.
Next question comes from Joe with the Seattle Times.
Two questions for the one for the governor, one for Mr. Sachs. For the governor, a judge is expected to rule Monday on whether your stay-at-home order should be temporarily stopped. Do you have concerns about that? And is that factoring into whatever decisions you might release in the coming days on extending the stay-at-home order? And then for Mr. Sachs, I'm just curious to hear a little bit more about the guidance today. What in here is completely new? Because I know that some of your guidance was already out there, or is this just sort of formed up? Is it directives? Can you just kind of parse that out for us?
I'll go first. No, the fact that some folks have filed a lawsuit is not affecting our decision-making. We're making a decision based on the science and the data and the metrics and the advice we have from epidemiologists and listening to people in the larger community and how this is working. That's what we're making our decisions on. We believe we're on very firm ground, both by Washington law, by statute, and also by the state and federal constitutions. And I feel very confident that we have complied with the obligation, not just a right, but an obligation for the governor to act to save people's lives. And that's fundamentally what we're doing. And I think people understand that. In Washington, that's why there has been such a high rate of compliance, so people know how dangerous this virus is, and they know that we can actually do effective things, which we're doing. So now, having said that, I want to tell you, look, I respect people's right to go to court. They have a right to challenge decisions in our government, and thank goodness we live in a country where we have a good judicial system that can give the people the right to have these things reviewed. That's fine with us. But we feel we're on very good ground, we're making good decisions, and we're saving lives, and that's a pretty good day's work.
And Joe, thanks for the question. I would describe what came out today as building upon the work that we've done. So embedded in this are the things that we've already done, but there are a number of places where we articulate new requirements based upon some of the things that we've been learning over the last few months. So just a couple of examples. Eric mentioned one in terms of the spacing of hand washing stations. A second one is in this directive, consistent with what we've seen with other industry agreements, is the expectation that workers in the agricultural industry are wearing masks unless they're working alone. There's also some more specificity than we provided up until now around transportation. This is an industry where workers receive transportation from work site A to work site B from an employer. So we talk about things like making sure that the vehicles are cleaned after each time transportation occurs, or if you're sitting on a bus, that you're placed in a zigzag manner, or that windows are left open to the extent possible. So this is a building upon and creating some new expectations, but it's certainly consistent with what we've been doing over the last number of months.
Q13. Hi there. First, for the governor, we know that Snohomish County, even though they haven't met the case requirements, would like to seek a phase two variance from you. They feel that they've gone through enough economic pain, according to its leaders. Can you just react to whether that would be a possibility for Snohomish County? And then my next question is likely for Mr. Moss or Ms. Strange, but Dr. Wiesman or Governor, if you would like to weigh in as well. I want to go back to early on in the outbreak. Is there any evidence that long-term care facilities before the governor's order that acted more quickly to quarantine its residents before any kind of order was given down, before any cases happened in those facilities? Did you find that those facilities that acted really quickly beforehand were able to stave off the outbreak, or really was it a matter of luck whether COVID entered a facility or not? Thank you.
Do you want to go ahead, John or Bill?
So thanks for that question. This is John Wiesman. I don't think we really have any hard evidence of that. We do know that infection control procedures, when implemented, can be very effective. But, you know, this whether or not a facility ended up with an outbreak does rely on a number of things. One was their virus circulating in the community. So we know that early on, for example, the Puget Sound area really is the place we think where, you know, we had more virus to begin with. So facilities in another part of the state were at much less risk for that. And as the governor said, you know, some of this, well, the infections, if staff, if residents weren't leaving the facility, which, you know, they certainly were out in the community, but this infection could come in through visitors, it could come in through workers, somebody who had a visit at a healthcare provider, you know, had to go out or they were out on a tour. And what we're learning now, which is why this work is so important, that there are asymptomatic infections. That is, there is infection without any symptoms and perhaps never developing symptoms. Maybe 25 to 40% of cases could actually be asymptomatic. We didn't know that at the beginning of this outbreak. This is a new virus. Previous coronaviruses didn't act that way. So in terms of early on, I think, you know, it makes some sense that if you had good infection control practices in place, that certainly gave you a better chance of not having any infection. But it also became a difficult job when there wasn't enough personal protective equipment for folks, a difficult job when there was asymptomatic infection and we didn't know that and we weren't limiting visitors. So I don't think we have great evidence, you know, that I could point to answer your question specifically, but it does make some intuitive sense that if you were better at infection control procedures, you had a better chance of having less COVID.
Yeah, in regard to Snohomish, under the current order, there is not a procedure for that. But in the next few days, we will have more decisions about June 1 and where we go from here. And I think some of that will be responsive to some of the concerns that some of the folks in Snohomish County have. We've had good talks with their leadership as recently as last night or night before last. So I think there'll probably be some pleased folks to some degree.
Next question comes from Jim with the News Tribune.
Governor, just to follow up on that, it sounds like that you're working on criteria for the larger counties. And then the second question, which would be, would you say to those who feel that both of these announcements are coming too late?
Well, what I've learned in this business of dealing with this virus is that no matter what decision you make, you know, a lot of people think it was too early and a lot of people think it's too late. And we make the best judgments we can. We have been working on both these issues for some period of time. And I just want to reiterate, this is not the first thing we've done for these communities. This is just another step of the continuum of protecting people in agriculture and long-term care facilities. We acted fairly quickly to prevent visitors. We've had strike teams go out to these facilities. We've had many, many educational things in infection control. The state has provided PPE and test facilities for long-term care facilities. I just want to point out these things are just an ongoing part of our efforts. I do want to say that we have been frustrated in some of our ability to do some of these things, including this testing. So as you know, testing supplies have been in very short supply, including the swabs. As you know, we've had probably only a quarter of the swabs we need to actually test the nurses and the physicians and the firefighters and the police officers and the ambulance drivers and people in long-term care facilities. They are all in Tier 1. So everybody was in the same boat. There simply was not enough of this testing material available, and it's been very frustrating to all of us, and I may be the most frustrated person in the state about that. So had we had additional testing capacity, I think we could have done these things earlier, but that's been a great limitation. Now, the other thing is that the science has advanced. As John talked about, the science has advanced significantly in the last several weeks to show how prevalent asymptomatic transmission is. We thought that was a possibility, but it has now become a certainty, and particularly a higher percentage of transmissions appear to be from asymptomatic transition, which has increased in the last several weeks the need for this more broad-scale testing. So both the science has improved and the testing supplies have improved. I know you've heard my concern that we have not had the assistance in the federal government we wanted for a long time to get testing facilities. That has improved. We've got several hundred thousand swabs that have been delivered in the last several days. So this has now enabled us to take these next steps. On the agricultural side, I think that we've got these things in time because, as we know, we now are having an influx of many more people into our state with the harvest season coming on. But we've been working diligently to take, again, the next steps. This was not the first step. This is one of many we've already taken in the agricultural facilities. We've already had protection in residential situations, in some social distancing and the like. So I would say that I'm glad we got this done, and we've listened to a lot of people in doing it. I think when we've developed this, and this has been a challenge, look, we're making decisions on an hourly basis with huge ramifications for people's lives. When you make decisions like this, you want to talk to people. And so we've spent a lot of time in the last several weeks listening to orchardists and farmers and ag representatives and agricultural workers and doctors. And we've tried to get as much information as we can. I think we've come up with a really good product in really tough circumstances.
Next question comes from Essex with Cairo.
Yes.
Essex, I'm sorry, Essex, we can't hear you. If we can try a different avenue.
Essex, the same thing that happened last week is happening again.
Thanks, Essex. We'll be back to you.
Okay, next question comes from Carolyn with the South Seattle Emerald.
Hi, yes. So I have two longer questions. The first one is for Governor Inslee, and the second one is for Director Sachs. Governor Inslee, last week the Seattle City Council passed a resolution asking that you create a relief fund for undocumented workers who do not have access to unemployment benefits and taxes. As we've seen, undocumented workers are among make up a lot of the agricultural workforce. Is your office looking into creating such a relief fund? And if so, what does the timeline look like?
Yeah, let me just answer that. Yes, we are looking at that. And I'm still trying to get a definitive answer whether or not the governor has the ability to do this without legislative action. We're still trying to nail that down. So we need to get that answer first. And then if the answer is yes, then to look at what the appropriate scale and scope and how it would be targeted. So we hope to have that shortly, and it is under active consideration.
Thank you. I appreciate answering that. And Mr. Sachs, so in late April, I reported on issues facing workers in agricultural packing warehouses in Eastern Washington. One of their biggest concerns was that LNI was not actively enforcing the requirements it had put out earlier that month, and that employers were frequently in violation of their requirements without repercussions. Instructing LNI inspectors to make more frequent visits to agricultural warehouses to ensure agricultural employers are following proper protocols. And then, you know, if not, how will you be making sure they are? And if so, how frequent will the visits be? And what will the inspectors be looking for?
Thank you for the question. So we have been inspecting warehouses. We have a number of inspections that are currently open. And when our inspectors are going in, they're looking for the kind of things that we've been talking about. So is there social distancing? If there's not social distancing because of the nature of the job, what are the mitigations that employers are putting in place to protect workers? Is there enough hand washing stations? Are things being cleaned on an appropriate basis? Are workers being trained? So we have been doing inspections. We will continue to be doing those inspections. And for the warehouses that ask for it, we're also available to provide consultations. It's our belief that the more we can be working with both workers and with the employers to identify best practices, good safety practices and encourage collaboration between the workers on the front line and the management in packing houses, the more likely it is that we're going to have safe working conditions across the state.
Next, we're going to go back and try Essex again.
Okay, hope you're hearing me better now, Governor.
You bet. You bet.
Would you clarify something from yesterday, Governor? And then I also have a question for the Secretary. Would you be clear about your position on Commissioner Levine? Does she continue to have your full confidence?
Yes. She and the department are doing a very difficult job now, and I think have had some recent success. I think she announced today that the department has been able to stop, intercept, or recover about $300 million from this criminal syndicate that is attacking America right now. We're not the only state being attacked. That's some good news. Under her leadership, the department has also been very aggressive in the last few days, putting in a host of other measures to reduce the risk from these criminal syndicates. And I have been advised of those, and they are multiple layered and they're technologically adept. I can't share those with you, obviously, because we don't want to tell the criminals what our strategies are, but I think they have been considerable. And it is a difficult thing the department's doing right now because it's simultaneously trying to accelerate our ability to get these payments out to people who are justifiably making claims. And this is extremely frustrating to people who've been waiting weeks to get their payments. And yet if we turn the dial towards security, every time we do that, it slows down our ability to get those payments out to people. So that dial either goes to reducing the risk of hunger or it goes to decreasing the risk of fraud. And so they're having to make some really hard decisions. I think they've made some good ones recently to simultaneously try to get these checks to payment who are so desperate for these unemployment compensation benefits while simultaneously reducing the risk. And I think they are achieving both of those as quickly as possible.
And for the Secretary, with this additional testing, will care homes now be able to reopen to visits from families which have been so missed?
Thanks. What I think this will do is give us a sense of just how much asymptomatic infection is present in our facilities, and it will add to our thinking. We do know that reducing the number of contacts from folks who are out in the community certainly helps in this infection control. And we're also concerned, as the governor said, about needing to be able to have visitors and folks have that family contact. And it's a tough balancing act here that we're very sensitive to. We really do appreciate, as the governor said, the staff's efforts to help people connect electronically with video kind of communications and telecommunications. And that's been, an additional task that the staff have had to take on in those facilities. So we do continue to take a look at this, and going forward, we haven't made any decisions about how to best proceed. But this information will give us, this testing will give us additional information as we ponder the options out there for all of us.
Next question comes from Dan with Fox News.
Hey, Governor, last week you were asked about a report that found COVID deaths in Washington State may have been inflated some because of the methodology used by the Department of Health. You stood by the number and then said, quote, "The problem is you get some people out there who are fanning these conspiracy claims from the planet Pluto." Today, the Department of Health statistics manager told me that they're in the process of removing cases where people tested positive for COVID but later died from something else. They know of two drug overdoses and two gunshot deaths and 30 other cases where people had other grave conditions like late-stage cancer or COVID was not listed as a cause or even a factor on the death certificate. I've heard no one say the actual number of people killed is okay or that this is a call to be irresponsible, as you claimed was said last week. Well, your reaction to that report suggests to some that you are the one playing politics with the science and data. How do you respond?
Well, listen, I guess what I would like to say is that the actual number of COVID deaths may actually be higher than has been reported, because we have a number of deaths that did not take place in hospitals. There were not autopsies. No one knows the exact number right now. It could be higher. There was a description a few days ago by Dr. Lofi and others that suggested it actually could be higher than has been reported. Now, possibly it's a few lower. That possibility exists as well, I suppose. The point I would make is, two, it's to some degree irrelevant. Each one of these is a tragedy for a family. And hundreds of deaths is a pandemic at any number, whether it's 800 or 850 or 849. And I think, frankly, arguing about that, it doesn't change our ability to make really good decisions to try to change lives. And so I'm not focused on that. Others may be. I am not. I know that it is high enough that we need to act in responsible ways to reduce the transmission rate. I know that we have more work to do in that regard. And I just have to push back a little bit. You said that nobody has sort of attacked the need to deal with this. Well, in fact, they have. I think it's very regrettable that they have. We've had public officials who've called this a hoax. A hoax. We've had public officials who said it was going to be gone the next Monday. We've had public officials who've said that testing is overrated. In fact, we've had one very prominent politician say that. And that has been very damaging to our nation's ability to do what Republicans and Democrats need to do, which is to work together to end this scourge. And I can tell you that both Republican governors and Democratic governors have tried to convince the federal government to be a better partner to try to not spread misinformation about this. And so whether that's coming from Pluto or the White House, maybe is not that big of a difference, because it's dangerous. Let me give you another example right now, since we're on this topic, because it's a very important one. We've had a lot of success in Washington because Washingtonians have been acting to really act to protect their families, both Republicans and Democrats. It's the reason we've been so successful in bending the curve down. We have huge compliance with our stay-home order. People are socially distancing. Business leaders are doing some good things to protect their employees in very difficult circumstances. So we've had a lot of success, but we're not done yet, and now we're trying to remove the social distancing so businesses can reopen and people can go back to their churches and the like. But we need to replace that with a new strategy to reduce the rates of transmission. One of the really important things in our ability to do that is is wearing the facial cover and masks. And what the science is now telling us is it can be very, very effective when people wear masks in grocery stores, when we reopen our retail outlets, when you're in a crowded place. Those masks can be really, really effective. And unfortunately, we've had leaders, at least one, who are trying to convince Americans not to do that. That's really dangerous right now, and it's very unfortunate. So I am not shy about expressing an opinion about what endangers the 7 million people that I work for. I'm not intimidated by people who want to say that we're not going to protect our citizens. So I'll stand by my statement that there are those who are causing dangerous misstatements, and I will speak against them.
Time for a few more questions. Next question comes from Jim with the Spokesman Review.
Governor, a couple of quick questions for you. One is, do you expect the new rules for agricultural and food processing workers to end any labor disputes currently in central Washington? And then on the testing at long-term care facilities, will the public getting the results of these tests broken down by the individual long-term care facilities?
To your first question, I don't know what impact it'll have on some of the labor action that's going on. I would hope that it will have improvements, certainly, that people will recognize. But I haven't had conversations with the labor groups to know whether that will change their position. As far as the information on long-term care facilities, John, do you want to handle that? Or Cheryl or Bill?
One of the things that's required is that as a facility gets a positive test, they are required to report that to the Department of Social and Health Services so we can track those and have that information, and that certainly is shareable information. And then the medical provider labs also report that to the Department of Health. And so we can compile those numbers, and we'll be taking a look at those and sharing that information as well.
Okay. Next, we go to Mai with the Yakima Herald.
Hello. Thanks for taking my questions. I have three questions. I have one question for Dr. Wiseman. There was a strike team that came to Yakima Valley earlier this month to address outbreaks, including in agricultural facilities. I'm interested in hearing what that continued effort in addressing existing outbreaks in fruit packing houses. I have a question for Director Sachs, which is you've already done inspections at several agriculture facilities. I'm interested in hearing what follow-up you might be doing in light of the new regulations that have come out today and yesterday from Department of Health. And then I have a question for Eric. I'm interested in hearing you guys filed a lawsuit with another union over enforcement and regulations. I'm interested in hearing how these new regulations address some of the issues that you addressed in the lawsuit. Thanks.
So those strike teams are exactly what we're talking about, where we can send out not only to long-term care facilities, but to work sites as well as being an important part. So the work is they go in, they identify what they know of the situation at that point, along with the local public health officials. They can recommend additional testing that we want to do, bring in the supplies so that they can have the supplies and the ability to get those to labs so we can get quick turnaround tests on those. Also look at what infection control practices are currently in place, what might need to be strengthened. Perhaps there were some practices that were just simply wrong, and being able to correct those as we go. And then as we do that, part of that is providing technical assistance to and with the local health department, the employer, the workers, to make sure that everybody can have the information they need. So the strike teams are really important. They were out there, both the Washington State Department of Health, as well as Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, were out working and in both long-term care facilities and in the food processing. And I think folks have found that very beneficial and brought in additional testing resources. So I hope that answers your question.
So this is Joel Sachs for your second question. Our intent is to continue down the path that we've been down, which is we will be doing some proactive inspections. We will also be evaluating and responding to complaints that we get from workers and referrals from other organizations, and partnering with growers and packing houses that ask for our help from a consultative perspective. In terms of the enforcement criteria that we will use, come June 3rd, when this criteria formally takes effect, when our inspectors show up and open a new inspection or begin a new consultation on June 4th, June 5th, they'll be applying this criteria. I also believe, because a lot of this criteria are things that are best practices, I suspect that we will find at least in a number of facilities on a number of farms, these things are already happening because growers have put them in place a few weeks ago. And we want to ensure that that's happening across the industry.
And then, Mike, thanks for your question. On behalf of the UFW, not in a position to comment on the specifics of the lawsuit, but I can share with you that since the beginning of this pandemic, farm workers have been very clear with us that what they desperately wanted was clarification about what does it mean when the governor back in March spoke about the requirements of social distancing and adequate sanitation measures being in place at all essential businesses. With the promulgation of the housing rules a week or so ago now, and with these regulations on transportation and worksite requirements, in our talking with workers, we're feeling much better about having the clarity that they were looking for, so everybody knows what the rules are, they will be enforced, and hopefully the essential women and men who are keeping us fed can continue to do their jobs safely and without putting their families at risk.
Last question. Final question comes from Keith Liscoma.
Governor and Secretary Wiesman, Pierce County just announced that they are perhaps taking four names off of the death list to see if they indeed were COVID-related. If numbers go down in Pierce County, numbers go down in King and Snohomish County, might they have an easier time getting in if you lower the bar to deal with that? And what's to prevent all the people in those three counties from flooding Sac County, Thurston County, to possibly bring the virus with them?
Could you try that last part again? We broke up a little bit.
So what's to prevent people from King, Pierce, and Snohomish County from flooding the nearby counties that are already in phase two? And the first part of it was Pierce County is rethinking four of their deaths that may not be directly related.
Well, fortunately, we have not experienced the kind of flooding phenomena, so we hope that that would not be the case. I don't think it has to date. We now have over two dozen counties that have been open to phase two, and I don't think they've experienced that type of concern. So hopefully that would not happen in central Puget Sound core. As far as the number, it's a little bit what I talked about a little bit, is whether these numbers go down two or three, it would not affect the fatality rates, would not affect the larger decision, in part because we look at many more things other than just the fatalities. We look at the infection rate, the total infection, the percentage of hospitalizations that are associated with the disease, whether that is going up or down. We look at testing capacity. Importantly, we look at the contact tracing and isolation capability of counties, because as we've talked about, we need to have that new smart weapon that can replace the social distancing. So the numbers of fatalities is only one of the things that we look at, and I doubt just a one or two change is going to fundamentally change the assessment. But as I've indicated, we'll have more to say about that. I hope tomorrow, that is not a certainty, but I'm hopeful tomorrow to have some more to say about that.
Any final words,
Governor? Yes, one thing is, in listening to our discussion today, thinking about our agriculture workers and what we're doing, and one of the things is this issue of masking and PPEs. And this is going to become an increasing part of our discussion in our state. I'm really glad that we're moving forward on masking requirements. And because I think the science is becoming increasingly clear that this can be a very significant part of our strategy to reduce the rates of transmission of this virus. And I'm glad that we're finding really leaders who will speak about that, business leaders and others. I had two Republican governors, colleagues of mine, Doug Burgum of North Dakota, and Mike DeWine of Ohio. They showed some real courage the other day in speaking about the value of masking and the fact that it protects other people, and it's a demonstration of our love for our neighbors, that when we wear a mask, it's a demonstration that we don't want to infect them. And I hope that we're going to have a success on this, not just for agricultural workers, but for all of us. We'll have more to say about this in the next few days. But as we do these orders, these are orders. These are now the law of the state of Washington. But our success is going to be as much or more on our individual acts of kindness and responsibility and love for our community. And certainly masks is one of the ways to demonstrate that. Some health district county officials in the last few days have done a particular order in this regard. And I just want to reiterate that the governor is just one of the people in this fight. The success is really going to be based on the individual decisions by Washingtonians. So far, they've been fantastic. They've been on the beam. They've been committed. They've been courageous. And I want to thank people for that. I think if we keep this up, we're going to continue to beat down this virus so we can get back to our lives as we want to as soon as possible.
So for that, please wash your hands.